Welcome to the Deep Dive, where we cut through the noise, bypass the superficial headlines, and get you straight to the insights that truly matter. Today, we're peeling back the layers on a corner of the tech world that is absolutely fundamental to almost every device you touch, but one that often operates in the shadows of the tech giants. The specialty semiconductor foundry. You might instantly picture big names like Intel, NVIDIA, or Samsung when you hear chips. And of course, those players are pivotal, no doubt about it. But there's this whole intricate, often overlooked ecosystem tirelessly fabricating the specialized semiconductors that power our everyday reality. Especially in the mission-critical systems, you know, in our cars, the intricate machinery in modern factories, and the life-saving equipment in our hospitals. These are the chips that might not be the absolute fastest, but they are incredibly vital, incredibly robust, and often incredibly specialized.
Indeed. And our mission today is to embark on a deep dive into one of these fascinating specialized players, XAB Silicon Foundries SE. They trade as XABB.PA over in Europe. Now, this isn't your typical chip maker chasing the absolute bleeding edge for the next smartphone or the latest AI accelerator. Not at all. XFAB is what we call a pure play specialty foundry. What's truly fascinating here, I think, is how they've strategically positioned themselves, meticulously focusing on high value analog and mixed signal semiconductors. And this isn't just, you know, a simple business decision. It's really a strategic anchor. It firmly places them within these long cycle, high growth, secular trends that gives them a distinct flavor and, crucially, a very different risk reward profile compared to the broader, often much more volatile, consumer electronics-driven semiconductor market.
That's a crucial distinction right off the bat, a really important point. So we've got a comprehensive investment analysis framework for XFAB right here in front of us. It's packed with financial data, market insights, and lots of granular details about the strategic positioning. Our goal today isn't just to recite facts, though. We want to extract the most important nuggets of knowledge, the key insights for you. We want to help you truly understand their unique business model, the competitive advantages that make them so sticky with customers. We'll get into their financial health and, of course, where their future growth opportunities lie. Especially, you know, in light of recent industry shifts that have highlighted the undeniable importance of specialized manufacturing and resilient, diversified supply chains. That's become huge, hasn't it? Think of this as your shortcut to understanding a vital yet often unseen player enabling some of the biggest transformations shaping our modern world.
Right. And the executive summary of our analysis immediately tells a really compelling story. We learn that over 90%, think about that, over 90% of XFE's revenue now flows from just three markets: automotive, industrial, and medical. That's a massive concentration. But what's the real significance of that number? How does that fundamentally change their risk profile compared to, say, a decade ago? It's not just a big number, it's a strategic fortress, really. A decade ago, they, like many chip makers, were much more exposed to the whims and, frankly, their rapid obsolescence cycles of consumer electronics. You know, those boom and bust cycles every 18 months driven by the latest gadget.
Yeah, chasing the next phone release.
Exactly. Now, with 90% in these long cycle, often highly regulated sectors, they've built in a layer of demand stability that most chip makers can only dream of. For example, once an automotive chip is designed into a car platform, it's often there for maybe 7, even 10 years. A stark contrast to a smartphone's 1, maybe 2-year cycle. That stability is the key insight here. Now, they did see record revenue climbing to over $900 million in 2023. Impressive. Then, like much of the industry, they faced about a 10% decline in 2024. That was due to that broad industry downturn and significant customer inventory destocking, a market correction. Yet, and this is the impressive part, despite that drop, they maintain robust EBITDA margins above 20%. This resilience, combined with aggressive capital expenditure backed by long-term customer agreements and even significant customer prepayments, which is fascinating, really signals confidence in their long-term demand visibility and the strength of that strategic pivot they made.
Okay, so if we're trying to make sense of this intricate but vital part of the tech world, the central questions for any observer, for you listening, are probably these. Can XFAB's powerful secular drivers, these massive, undeniable long-term trends like vehicle electrification and smart factories, can they sustainably outpace its cyclical vulnerabilities, which we just saw play out in 2024? How effectively will its substantial capital investments, those hundreds of millions they're pouring into their facilities, how effectively will that translate into future profitable growth? And critically, does the current valuation adequately price this crucial balance of opportunity and risk? This is a company in a really fascinating phase of transition, isn't it? Navigating a challenging market while simultaneously investing heavily for the future. Understanding that dynamic is absolutely key. So let's unpack this and dive deeper. Understanding XFAB, a specialty foundry's edge. When we typically hear semiconductors, our minds often race to the cutting-edge chips in our phones, our laptops, or maybe the latest AI servers. We picture that relentless pursuit of ever smaller nanometer nodes, 7, 5, now even 3 nanometers. It's a race for raw computing power and miniaturization. But XFAB and the specialty foundry world they inhabit operates a fundamentally different game. It's a game that might escape the flashy headlines, but it's absolutely crucial to the reliability and performance of countless devices we use every single day.
Exactly. XFAB operates firmly in what we call the more than more segment. And this is a critical distinction, often misunderstood, I think. Unlike those leading-edge digital foundries, think TSMC or Intel, which primarily compete on shrinking transistor sizes to pack more processing power into a smaller space, make chips faster. XFAB competes on the unique performance characteristics and specialized features of its analog and mixed signal processes. These are often based on more mature and larger technology nodes, think 180 nanometers, maybe even 350 nanometers. In the digital world, that sounds ancient, right? But they are incredibly highly customized and engineered for specific, often very demanding functions. It's less about the drag race to the smallest nanometer and more about building bespoke, ruggedized tools for specific, often harsh environments. If leading-edge digital foundries are designing the sleek, high-performance engine for a Formula One car, XFAB is building the sophisticated, durable sensor systems for a deep-sea submersible or the robust power electronics for an electric vehicle, places where reliability, unique function, and resilience trump raw processing speed every time. It's a fundamental pivot in what cutting-edge truly means in silicon.
That's a fantastic analogy, really clarifies it. So essentially, it's a different kind of arms race, one based on intellectual depth and unique capabilities rather than just, you know, raw financial firepower to build the next cutting edge fab. Does that mean their margins are inherently more defensible because of that specialized IP? And what's the scale of this more than more market they operate in? Is it significant?
Yeah, precisely that kind of arms race. Yeah. Focused on specialized engineering, which provides significant competitive advantages. The more than more difference is all about delivering unique functionality and exceptional reliability, not just raw computing power. For instance, these chips might be designed for incredibly high voltage tolerance, absolutely essential for power management in EVs or industrial motor control. Or they could be engineered for ultra-low power consumption, perfect for battery-operated medical devices, or maybe IoT sensors that need to last for years in remote locations without a battery change. We're also talking about high-frequency RF performance for specialized communication systems, or robust sensor integration to accurately measure everything from temperature and pressure to movement and chemical properties, often under extreme conditions. This creates a distinct competitive dynamic based on deep, specialized engineering expertise and proprietary intellectual property, a kind of secret sauce built over decades. It's not based on the immense multi-billion dollar capital expenditure required for each successive generation of leading-edge digital scaling. Now, the global foundry market was substantial, around $148 billion in 2024, projected to exceed $250 billion by 2032, so huge market. Within that massive market, the analog and mixed signal segment, which is XFAB's specific niche, was already around $64 billion in 2024. So this isn't a small corner. It's a very substantial, high-value segment of the semiconductor industry that often just flies under the radar.
That really drives home the point. Okay, so XFAB isn't just churning out generic chips on an assembly line. They describe themselves as a long-term development and manufacturing partner. That phrase implies a much deeper, almost symbiotic relationship than a typical supplier, doesn't it? What does that actually look like in practice? What are the benefits or maybe even the challenges of operating with that kind of partnership model?
That's an excellent observation, and it's absolutely central to their business. Their approach as a long-term partner is key. It means they offer a comprehensive portfolio that includes proprietary and highly specialized process technologies, extensive design support, and pre-built intellectual property blocks. These are essentially ready-made functional components that customers can integrate into their designs. Saves them a lot of time and effort. So this isn't just about manufacturing, it's about actively collaborating and enabling their customers, who are primarily fabless semiconductor companies and integrated device manufacturers, IDMs, to develop truly differentiated products. They're helping these companies create chips that solve very specific, often complex, real-world problems that generic chips simply can't handle. For example, if a customer needs a chip that can accurately measure tiny electrical signals in a noisy industrial environment, XFEB works with them right from the initial design phase, leveraging their specialized processes to achieve that precise, robust performance. It's a much higher touch, deeply integrated relationship.
And what are the core technologies they bring to the table to make that happen? What's in their toolkit, so to speak, that allows them to be this kind of indispensable partner?
Their technological expertise is indeed highly focused and quite specialized. Three main areas, really. First, there's analog mixed signal IC production. This is the absolute bedrock of their business. This involves processing chips that deal with the messy, unpredictable, real world, things like subtle changes in a patient's heartbeat, the precise pressure in an industrial pipeline, or converting acoustic waves of your voice into digital data. These aren't just simple converters. They are the critical interpreters, the language bridge between our physical existence and the precise, calculating digital brains of our devices. Without them, your self-driving car couldn't feel the road, and your smart thermostat wouldn't know if it's hot or cold. It's fundamental.
Okay, that makes sense. The real-world interface.
Precisely. Second, they specialize in microelectromechanical systems, or MEMS. We're talking about manufacturing miniaturized mechanical and electromechanical devices, like tiny, incredibly precise sensors and actuators. What's particularly clever is that they often integrate these MEMS devices directly with CMOS logic on the very same chip. This leads to smart sensors. These sensors can not only sense environmental data, but also process that data right there on the spot, filtering out noise or performing initial computations. Think of the accelerometers that rotate your smartphone screen or sophisticated pressure sensors in medical ventilators. Really clever stuff.
Wow, integrating mechanics of electronics on one chip.
Yeah. And then there's silicon carbide, or SiC. This is a rapidly growing and incredibly important area, often described as a kind of miracle material for power electronics. SiC is a wide bandgap semiconductor material. What that means is it can enable much higher power efficiency, handle significantly higher voltages, and operate reliably at much higher temperatures compared to traditional silicon. This makes it absolutely ideal for power electronics in applications like electric vehicles, where efficiency, fast charging, and robustness are paramount, and also for high-power renewable energy systems like solar inverters. This is clearly a key investment area for XFAB, given its immense potential to shape the future of electrification. So this deep partnership model means they're not just taking orders, they're deeply embedded in the customer's development cycle, building trust and proprietary knowledge that makes those relationships incredibly strong and, frankly, very hard to break.
We often hear about companies making strategic pivots, but this move by XFAB, shifting away from that often fickle consumer electronics merry-go-round, to these long-cycle automotive, industrial, and medical markets, it feels particularly decisive. What was the catalyst for such a fundamental strategic shift, and how quickly did it really take hold within the company? It seems quite dramatic.
It was absolutely a deliberate and calculated transformation. Management has, in fact, proudly called it successful. For years, many semiconductor companies were chasing the high volumes of consumer electronics, right? But that market comes with intense price pressure, very short product life cycles, and brutal inventory swings. Just look at recent history. XFEB recognized the inherent value and, crucially, the stability in markets where reliability, long-term supply guarantees, and highly specialized performance characteristics trump pure cost or speed. The numbers tell a really clear story of how rapidly this shift occurred. In 2023, these three core markets, auto, industrial, medical, accounted for a remarkable 91% of their total revenue. That was a significant jump from 84% the prior year, so a big move in just 1 year. By the first quarter of 2025, that share had expanded even further to 93%. This tells you just how central and how successful this strategic shift has been for them. It's effectively insulating them from much of the typical industry volatility we see elsewhere.
Let's dig into each of those pillars a bit more deeply then, because the dynamics in each can be quite different, can't they? What makes XFAB so embedded in these specific sectors? What's the secret sauce for each?
Certainly. Let's start with automotive. It's undoubtedly their largest and most important segment right now. In 2023, their automotive revenue hit a record $539.1 million. That was a substantial 38% year-over-year increase. Huge growth. This surge was heavily driven by the ramp-up of their specialized 180-nanometer automotive process, particularly at their French facility. It's a process specifically certified for the rigorous demands of the auto industry. What's truly impressive is its resilience. Even in that 2024 industry downturn, when other segments were contracting sharply, XFAB's Q3 2024 automotive revenue actually grew 8% year over year.
Wow, grew during the downturn.
Grew, while others fell. The key driver here is vehicle electrification. We're talking about sophisticated battery management systems, BMS, that ensure EV batteries operate safely and efficiently. Also, onboard chargers, critical powertrain inverters, all of these require specialized analog and mixed signal chips that can handle high voltages, high temperatures, and deliver extreme reliability over many, many years. By Q2 2025, automotive revenue was $143.4 million, comprising around 66%, two-thirds of their total revenue for that quarter, underscoring its dominance and critical importance.
Okay, automotive is clearly the giant. What about industrial?
Next, we have industrial. This segment generated $206.2 million in 2023, up a solid 19% year over year. It serves a vast range of applications that are becoming increasingly digitized and automated. Think factory automation, precision sensors, motor controllers, smart grids, robust power management ICs, renewable energy systems like solar panel inverters, high voltage, high efficiency chips. Now, this market was significantly impacted by customer inventory destocking in 2024. Many industries pulled back on orders quite hard, but it showed strong recovery signs by mid-2025. Q2 2025 revenue grew a robust 37% year over year to $47.2 million. So that indicates demand is beginning to normalize there.
Good signs of recovery then. And medical. That sounds like a very stable, high value area.
And finally, medical. Yes, it is a particularly high-value, long life cycle market. Innovation often takes longer, but once a product is adopted, it tends to have a very extended lifespan due to regulation and qualification. Medical revenue grew a healthy 21% to $67.3 million in 2023. Its growth is largely driven by the increasing sophistication of medical devices. Think about miniaturized ultrasound probes delivering higher resolution imaging, or medical-grade contactless temperature sensors for advanced monitoring, or even complex lab-on-a-chip solutions for rapid diagnostics, things that weren't possible a decade ago. These increasingly advanced devices critically rely on XAB's specialized sensor and MEMS technologies, often requiring both incredible precision and extreme reliability for patient safety. In Q2 2025, medical revenue was $15.1 million. Still significant, but smaller than the other two.
So this isn't just about selling chips. It's really about embedding themselves deeply in the critical long-term trends shaping these huge industries. They're not just a supplier. They're becoming an indispensable partner for companies building the future of transportation, manufacturing, and healthcare. And to do that effectively, they need a global reach, right? Manufacturing needs to be close to customers, potentially.
Exactly. And their global manufacturing footprint further solidifies that position and adds another important layer of strategic advantage. XFAB operates 6 wafer fabrication plants, or fabs, strategically located across Germany, in Erfurt, Dresden, and Itzehoe, France, Corbeil-Essonne, Malaysia, Kuching, and the U.S., Lubbock, Texas.
What are the strategic advantages of having such a diversified manufacturing base, especially in today's geopolitical climate where supply chain resilience is such a huge concern for everyone?
Yeah, it's become a massive topic. This diversification provides several crucial benefits that go beyond just simple operational efficiency. Firstly, it offers significant operational resilience, reduces the risk of a single point of failure in their supply chain. If one region faces a natural disaster or, you know, geopolitical disruption, other fabs can potentially pick up some of the slack. Secondly, it provides strategic proximity to major automotive and industrial customers in Europe, North America, and Asia. This is increasingly important in an era of supply chain de-risking and regionalization efforts. Companies are actively looking to diversify their sourcing away from single geographical concentrations, especially away from Asia in some cases. Their manufacturing capabilities are primarily centered on these mature and specialized process nodes, utilizing both 150 millimeters, that's 6-inch, and 200 millimeter 8-inch wafer platforms. They're heavily focusing their capacity expansion on their 180 millimeter CMOS technology. That's a popular and high volume platform for their core markets because it hits a sweet spot of performance and cost. Beyond that core CMOS, these fabs are equipped for truly specialized manufacturing, high voltage applications crucial for power electronics, complex MEMS devices for advanced sensing, and that silicon carbide processing for next gen power solutions. This allows them to offer tailored, highly specialized solutions across diverse geographical and technological needs, catering to the specific evolving requirements of their varied customer base. Particularly important in regions keen on securing their domestic supply chains, like Europe and the US right now. 2, navigating the competitive landscape.
We've touched on this, but let's really drill down into why this specialty segment, this more than more niche, is so attractive. It seems, as you said, insulated from some of the brutal capital demands, the rapid obsolescence, and the intense scale-driven competition of the leading-edge digital world. It's genuinely a different kind of playing field. How does that manifest in their competitive strategy day to day.
You're absolutely right. It's a completely different competitive dynamic. The specialty foundry market valued around $64 billion in 2024 within that larger $148 billion total foundry market. It thrives on factors beyond just the absolute smallest nanometer nodes. It's about unparalleled process diversity, proven long-term reliability think chips that work perfectly for a decade inside a car engine, and specific performance features that are incredibly difficult to achieve consistently. We're talking about things like exceptional high voltage handling for power management, incredible power efficiency for battery-powered devices, or highly specialized RF capabilities for critical communications, things that don't just happen by shrinking transistors. The primary growth drivers for this segment are those powerful secular trends we mentioned. Electrification and digitization, sweeping across virtually all industries. In the automotive sector, for instance, the rapid shift to EVs and ADAS dramatically increases the demand for specialized power management ICs, a vast array of sensors, robust microcontrollers.
But hundreds of chips per car now, isn't it?
Oh, easily. Many of them analog, managing everything from engine temperature and battery charge to seat position and brake response. Similarly, the proliferation of the Internet of Things, IoT, and Industrial Automation Industry 4.0 requires immense numbers of analog and mixed signal chips. These chips are the crucial bridge between the physical world, sensors collecting data, and the digital world, processing and acting on that data. Controlling robots, optimizing energy use, ensuring precision manufacturing. What's also key here is that production in the specialty foundry market is concentrated on more mature process nodes, typically 28 nanometers and older. These often utilize those 200 millimeter wafer facilities, which historically were maybe thought to be outdated. However, these older manufacturing lines, many of which are fully depreciated, paid for themselves long ago, are actually seeing a significant resurgence in demand. It's quite remarkable. This creates a very favorable supply-demand balance, which supports stable pricing and high utilization rates for players like XFAB. It also provides critical insulation from those multi-billion dollar CapEx cycles constantly required at the leading edge of digital chip manufacturing. This allows them to compete on deep engineering expertise and specific performance rather than just raw spending power. It's like owning a classic, perfectly maintained, specialized workshop rather than constantly upgrading to the latest, most expensive robotic factory that might be obsolete in 2 years.
That makes a lot of sense. Building durable, specialized tools rather than racing for the next leading technological frontier. But even in a specialized niche like this, there's always competition, right? Who are the main players XFE is up against day-to-day, and how do they differentiate themselves from these peers in this specific more-than-more world?
Right. The specialty foundry landscape is quite concentrated, but they aren't entirely alone, of course. Their most direct public competitor is probably Tower Semiconductor, based in Israel. TSE is their ticker. Tower is a leading analog foundry with deep expertise in areas like RF, power management, silicon germanium, or SiGe, for high-frequency applications, and even silicon photonics, SiPho, for optical data communication. They serve similar end markets, automotive, industrial, infrastructure. They reported annual revenues of about $1.44 billion in 2024 and held around 1.1% the top 10 global foundry market share in Q1 2024. Tower is known for its breadth of process technologies.
Okay, so a very direct competitor there.
Very direct. Then there's GlobalFoundries, or GFS. Now, GFS is the world's third largest foundry overall, a much larger entity, competing across a wider range of nodes. But they do compete directly with XFAB through their specialized technology platforms. They offer solutions like RFSOI for wireless, FDSOI for low power, SiGe, and BCD power management technologies, specifically targeted at automotive, communications, and IoT markets. GFS brings much larger scale and a broader customer base. Beyond these two, the market also includes other Taiwanese foundries like UMC and Vanguard International Semiconductor, VIS, who have some specialty offerings. Plus, you have the foundry services offered by large integrated device manufacturers, the IDMs like ST Microelectronics, Texas Instruments, and Infineon. These IDMs are interesting because they design and manufacture their own chips, but they also sometimes offer their excess factory capacity as foundry services. So they can sometimes be both customers and competitors, depending on the specific project and their own capacity needs. It's a complex relationship.
So how does XFA stack up against these formidable peers, especially the larger ones like Tower and GlobalFoundries? Does their specialized focus give them a unique financial profile when you compare them side by side?
Yeah, let's look at some key peer comparisons from the analysis. It's quite revealing. XFE has a market cap of roughly $1.0 billion and an enterprise value around $1.2 billion. This makes them significantly smaller than Tower Semiconductor, which has a market cap around $5.6 billion and certainly much, much smaller than GlobalFoundries with its $18.1 billion market cap. In terms of LTM revenue, that's last 12 months, XFE is at approximately $0.81 billion compared to Tower's $1.49 billion, and GFS is huge, $6.84 billion. So XFE is definitely a more concentrated niche player in terms of scale.
Okay, smaller scale. What about profitability, margins?
Right. When we look at profitability, XFE's LTM EBITDA margin is a solid 22.4%. Pretty healthy, but it does trail Tower's 31.3% and GFS's 34.7%. This suggests that while XFE maintains robust margins, the larger peers, likely due to greater scale, maybe more favorable product mix, or different depreciation schedules, do achieve a higher level of profitability overall. It's also worth noting, as we discussed, that XFE's revenue growth year over year was negative recently, 28.8%, while Tower's was positive, 7.2%. That reflects XFAB's specific cyclical challenges in 2024, largely due to that inventory destocking hitting their industrial and medical segments more acutely at that time. This comparison really highlights XFE's position. A highly specialized player with a strong niche, but operating on a smaller scale than some of its formidable, more diversified competitors. The financials reflect that balance of focused strength and smaller size.
In such a competitive, capital-intensive market, what makes XFE's customers stick around then? What are their moats, those durable competitive advantages that keep customers from jumping ship to a competitor, even when times get tough, like in 2024?
This is where it gets really interesting, and it's absolutely critical to understanding XFAB's long-term viability. They have cultivated several strong competitive advantages that act as powerful moats, making them a very sticky partner indeed. First, there's their profound technological differentiation. Their proprietary, highly specialized analog processes are incredibly difficult to replicate. Analog chip design is often called a black art for a reason. It's deeply tied to the specific physics and nuanced interactions within the manufacturing process itself. It's not a straightforward digital copy and paste job. It requires decades of accumulated expertise and specific intellectual property. Competitors can't just buy the same equipment off the shelf and instantly produce identical high-performance analog chips. There's know-how involved. Deep know-how.
The secret sauce you mentioned earlier.
That's exactly. Second, and crucially, this leads directly to high customer switching costs. This is a huge one. Once a customer has designed their complex chip using XFAB's specific process design kit, or PDK, which is basically a detailed blueprint and set of rules for designing chips for that foundry's particular processes, that design isn't easily portable to another foundry at all. Migrating a complex analog or mixed signal chip to a new manufacturer requires a complete redesign from the ground up, and then a lengthy, incredibly expensive requalification process. This is especially true in highly regulated markets like automotive and medical, where reliability and safety are absolutely paramount. You can't just swap parts. A requalification isn't just an inconvenience. It can be a multi-million dollar, multi-year nightmare involving extensive testing, validation, and recertification by regulators. Management has explicitly noted this as a very big burden for customers to switch. This naturally fosters incredibly sticky, long-term relationships, often spanning many years for a single product generation. It's almost like buying a custom-built vintage car. You wouldn't just take it to any garage for a major overhaul. You go back to the specialist who understands its unique quirks and specific engineering.
So it's not just a technological advantage, but a deep embedded relationship that's incredibly hard and expensive to break, especially in those high-stakes industries like auto and medical.
Precisely. Third, there are genuinely high barriers to entry for anyone trying to compete seriously in the specialized space. Building and equipping a semiconductor fab, even for these more mature nodes, still costs billions of dollars. It's not cheap. And beyond the immense capital, developing the deep engineering talent, the specific process intellectual property, and the manufacturing know-how required for high-performance analog and mixed-signal manufacturing takes not years, but decades. You simply cannot spin up an analog specialty foundry overnight. It's a marathon, not a sprint. It requires patience and deep pockets.
Okay, deep tech and deep pockets needed.
And finally, a significant and increasingly important moat is their strategic geographic footprint. This is becoming more and more relevant. With major manufacturing sites in Germany and France, XFE is strategically positioned within the European Union. In an era of heightened geopolitical tension and this global push to de-risk supply chains initiatives like the EU Chips Act, aiming to boost European chip production, are a clear example. this European presence is a key asset. For major European automotive and industrial customers, having a local, secure, and reliable source of supply is a critical strategic priority now, more than ever before. This makes XFE a natural long-term partner for them and helps insulate it from some of the geopolitical risks faced by more Asia-centric competitors. It adds another layer of security and resilience for its customers. In a world increasingly wary of concentrated supply chains, XFE European routes are a significant advantage, you know. 3. The financial pulse. From cyclicality to strategic investment.
Okay, let's dive into the numbers now and trace XAB's financial journey. Our source material outlines that period of strong growth, then the significant market-driven correction in 2024, and now, as you mentioned, some encouraging signs of recovery perhaps starting. Can you walk us through that trajectory, the financial roller coaster, if you will, and tell us how they've navigated these different phases? What do the numbers really tell us?
Yeah, the figures clearly show the cyclical pattern, which, as we know, is characteristic of the semiconductor industry. No escaping that entirely. However, it also strikingly demonstrates XAB's unique resilience within that environment, thanks to that strategic shift we talked about. We saw a robust growth phase. Total revenue expanded significantly, almost doubling from around $477 million in 2020 to a peak of over $906.8 million to be exact in 2023. This rapid acceleration was fueled by the post-pandemic surge in overall semiconductor demand and, crucially, their incredibly successful strategic market shift towards those core automotive, industrial, and medical segments. These markets just had strong pent-up demand.
Almost doubling revenue in 3 years is pretty impressive growth.
It really is. However, in 2024, the downturn hit, and revenue contracted by approximately 10% to $816.4 million. This was a direct consequence of the global semiconductor industry downturn and that widespread customer inventory destocking that affected nearly all players. Imagine customers who had double-ordered chips during the supply crunch suddenly finding themselves with warehouses full of stock and hitting the brakes hard on new orders. That's pretty much what we saw across the board. It was a sharp correction.
Right, the famous bullwhip effect in supply chains.
Exactly. What's particularly interesting, though, and a real testament to their strategy, is the end market divergence during this downturn. The automotive segment, their largest, showed remarkable resilience. Q3 2024 automotive revenue actually grew 8% year over year. That acted as a massive shock absorber for the company overall. In stark contrast, industrial and medical revenues fell sharply by 41% and 29% respectively in Q3 2024. Ouch. This highlights their increasing dependence on the automotive sector, which now accounts for over two-thirds of their quarterly revenue. It provided a significant cushion during a very tough period for other markets. The good news, as I mentioned, is that recent results from the first half of 2025 suggest a bottoming process. We're seeing sequential revenue growth, and they upgraded their full-year guidance. This indicates that the worst of the destocking cycle may finally be behind them, and we're potentially seeing the beginning of a recovery phase. Fingers crossed.
So while the decline in 2024 was sharp and certainly a challenge, that core automotive business truly provided a significant cushion, preventing an even deeper plunge. That resilience is key. But even with revenue contracting like that, how did their profitability hold up? Because in capital-intensive industries like foundries, that can be a real challenge when volumes drop. Fixed costs don't go away.
Absolutely. Fixed costs are huge in this business. And despite that revenue contraction, their ability to maintain profitability is truly noteworthy and speaks volumes about their operational discipline and the value of their specialized offerings. Let's look at gross margin. It climbed impressively from about 21.8% in 2021 to a strong 28.5% in 2023. This reflected a powerful combination of high factory utilization rates, meaning their expensive equipment was running nearly full out, efficiently a favorable product mix tilted towards their specialized high-value offerings, and disciplined cost control across their fabs. The 2024 downturn, as expected, caused a compression. Gross margin came down to 22.4%. This is largely because those lower volumes were being absorbed by the company's significant fixed costs. Maintaining and running those expensive fabs doesn't get much cheaper when you make fewer chips. When volumes drop, fixed costs weigh more heavily on each unit produced. Simple math, but painful.
Okay, so gross margin took a hit but stayed above 20%. What about EBITDA? That's often a better measure here.
Right. EBITDA margin, which is a critical measure for capital-intensive businesses like foundries because it smooths out the impact of depreciation and interest, followed a similar path. It peaked at a very healthy 27.1% in 2023 before contracting to 23.1% in 2024. Now, the fact that they maintained an EBITDA margin above 20% even during a significant revenue decline and an industry-wide inventory correction is a strong indicator. It points to their pricing power. Customers need their specialized chips and are willing to pay a fair price for them, and their robust operational resilience. It strongly suggests that as volumes recover, the company's operational leverage, the inherent efficiency of their fixed cost base, could drive a rapid rebound in profitability. And indeed, recent Q1 2025 results show EBITDA margins holding steady around 24%, which supports this view of a potential rapid rebound as demand returns. That leverage works both ways.
This really speaks to the strength of their specialized processes and those sticky customer relationships we talked about. It demonstrates that even when the broader market struggles, their core business has a remarkably strong foundation. But let's talk about cash flow. Because when I see those significant capital expenditures you mentioned, hundreds of millions, I immediately think about how a company funds that and what it means for their bottom line, their free cash flow.
Yeah, and this is truly one of the most intriguing parts of their financial picture right now. It shows a company in a phase of intense, deliberate reinvestment for the future. Their cash from operations, CFO, has consistently remained positive, which is good. It showcases their underlying profitability. It reached a strong $410 million in 2023 before moderating to about $196 million in 2024 amid those weaker business conditions. Still positive, though. However, this operating cash flow has been more than offset by an incredibly aggressive capital expenditure. CapEx program. CapEx surged from $175 million in 2022 to $323.6 million in 2023, and then further escalated to a massive $496.1 million in 2024. Huge numbers for a company this size. As a direct result of this heavy investment, free cash flow FCF has been deeply negative. It stood at minus $377 million in 2024.
Whoa, minus $377 million free cash flow. That sounds alarming on the surface. But you're saying that negative free cash flow in this particular case isn't necessarily a red flag indicating financial distress, but rather a deliberate strategic choice. And even more powerfully, customers literally putting their money where their mouths are, directly helping to fund this massive expansion through prepayments. That's a powerful signal of confidence from their client base, isn't it?
Exactly. You've hit the nail on the head. This isn't necessarily a bad sign or an indication of financial distress at all in this context. It's a deliberate strategic decision to invest heavily for future growth and capacity. They see the demand coming and they're building for it. And it's funded by both their healthy operating cash flow and, very significantly, by substantial prepayments from customers under long-term agreements, LTAs. The significance of these customer prepayments cannot be overstated. It serves as a powerful validation of XFE's future demand outlook. Customers are effectively co-investing in the capacity they know they will need down the line. Imagine a major car manufacturer saying, "We absolutely need these specialized chips for our next-gen EVs. Here's a check up front to ensure you have the capacity ready to make them for us." It's a huge vote of confidence. This de-risks the expansion significantly for XFE, essentially guaranteeing future orders for that new capacity, and it provides a very attractive, low-cost funding source for their CapEx compared to taking on more debt or issuing equity. The good news for shareholders looking for cash returns is that management indicates this major CapEx cycle is nearing completion. Spending is expected to moderate significantly in the second half of 2025. This should mark a key inflection point for future free cash flow generation, where those investments hopefully start to translate into positive cash flow for the business and ultimately potential returns for shareholders down the line. But it requires patience right now. IV, fueling future growth, strategy and opportunities.
Okay, so XFAD is clearly aligned with some massive, undeniable long-term trends. Electrification, industrial automation, the digitalization of healthcare. These aren't fads, they're fundamental shifts reshaping global industries for decades to come. Let's break down how XFE plans to leverage these secular tailwinds into sustained growth. How are they positioning themselves strategically to ride these powerful waves?
Yeah, their growth strategy is indeed fundamentally linked to these powerful macro trends that are driving immense and increasing demand for their specialized technologies. They are truly embedded in the future of these critical industries. First, let's look again at automotive electrification and intelligence. The global shift from traditional combustion engine vehicles to EVs and increasingly autonomous vehicles is just dramatically increasing the semiconductor content per vehicle. It's not just a small bump, it's an explosion in the number and sophistication of chips required. More sensors, more power management, more control units. XFA's high-voltage CMOS processes are absolutely critical for key components like advanced battery management systems, BMS. These carefully monitor and manage the EV battery's health, charge, and discharge to maximize range and safety. Vital stuff. Furthermore, their silicon carbide ADC technology enables far more efficient high-voltage power inverters and onboard chargers. These are essential for electric powertrains to convert power from the battery to the motor and to charge the vehicle quickly and safely. Higher efficiency means longer range or smaller batteries. This is a huge and growing market for them, and they are deeply embedded in its future, providing the literal power and control for the next generation of vehicles.
So automotive is a huge pillar. What about the industrial side?
Second, industrial automation and IoT, often kind Industry 4.0. The vision of smart factories and this vast proliferation of connected devices across industrial settings relies on an immense network of sensors, actuators, and power management ICs. XFE's expertise in MEMS and advanced sensor technologies provides the fundamental components for these intelligent systems. This includes everything from sophisticated industrial robotics that need precise movement and environmental awareness, to smart grid infrastructure that requires robust power control chips, and critical components for renewable energy systems like solar and wind power inverters that need to handle fluctuating power levels efficiently and reliably. They are essentially building the intelligence and control systems that underpin the modern industrial world, making factories smarter, more efficient, and more autonomous, another massive long-term trend.
And third pillar, healthcare.
And third, the digitalization of healthcare. An aging global population and the ever-increasing demand for more sophisticated, miniaturized, and portable diagnostic and monitoring tools are driving this market forward relentlessly. XSavvy's unique expertise in combining MEMS with CMOS logic on a single chip is crucial for developing these advanced medical devices. This includes things like miniaturized ultrasound probes that can deliver higher resolution images right at the point of care, maybe even connecting to your phone, or medical-grade contactless temperature sensors for mobile health applications, or even complex lab-on-a-chip solutions for rapid diagnostics, potentially allowing a doctor to get complex blood test results from a tiny sample right in their office within minutes. These are markets with long product life cycles, high barriers to entry due to stringent regulations, and a constant demand for improved performance and reliability fitting perfectly with XFE's strategic focus and capabilities.
Okay, so they're clearly aligned with the right markets. But it's not just about aligning with market trends. It's about having the right technology on the roadmap to deliver on those trends, right? What's on their development roadmap specifically? What are they investing in R&D-wise to keep them competitive and future-proof their offerings as these industries evolve?
Absolutely. They are indeed investing heavily in their technology roadmap to ensure they can not only capitalize on these opportunities, but also stay ahead of the curve technologically. One major area of focus is silicon carbide. Even with that cyclical downturn in the cyclic NEM market in 2024, driven by some oversupply in certain segments, it remains a cornerstone of their long-term strategy, especially for power electronics. The potential is just too large to ignore. Management has highlighted the development of a next-generation cyclic NEM platform. They expect this will significantly improve performance and, crucially, increase the number of chips they can produce per wafer by 30%. That translates directly into a significant cost advantage for their customers, making Cyclic's solutions more economically viable for a broader range of applications, which helps drive adoption. Their strategic focus for Cyclic is also expanding. It used to be primarily industrial applications, but now they're targeting a more balanced mix, increasingly going after the high-volume automotive market, especially for EV power electronics, where the efficiency gains of Cyclic are incredibly valuable for range and charging speed.
Okay, Cyclic is key. What else?
Another key area is advanced CMOS and microsystems. MEMS, they are making substantial investments to expand their 180-nanometer and 110-nanometer CMOS capacity. This expanded capacity is vital not only for meeting the growing demand for their core analog and mixed signal products, but also because this CMOS technology serves as the essential foundation for their highly differentiated MEMS business. You need the CMOS logic to control the MEMS part. Their unique ability to integrate complex mechanical microstructures like tiny moving mirrors for optical switching or pressure diaphragms for sensors with advanced CMOS logic on a single chip. That's a key competitive advantage in those demanding medical and industrial sensor markets. This integration allows for smarter, smaller, and more robust sensors that can do more processing right on the chip itself, reducing system complexity and cost for their customers.
This massive investment phase, this huge CapEx spend, is clearly crucial for their future then. How are they funding this massive outlay? What are the trade-offs they're making with this capital allocation strategy? And what does it ultimately mean for shareholders right now? Are they getting diluted?
Yeah, their capital allocation strategy is currently dominated by reinvestment for growth. It's a very clear and deliberate choice by management at this point in time. They are in the final stages of a major capacity expansion program, with projected capital expenditures of approximately $550 million for the full year 2024. That's huge relative to their revenue. Importantly, as we said, this intense spending is expected to moderate significantly in the second half of 2025 as the program concludes. So the peak spending should be behind them soon. This intense period of investment is a clear strategic decision. Prioritize capturing future market share and meeting anticipated long-term demand over short-term shareholder returns like dividends or buybacks. They are essentially sacrificing immediate cash returns to build a stronger, larger company for the future.
Building for the long term.
Exactly. Regarding funding mechanisms, the capital for this expansion comes from a robust combination of internally generated cash flow from operations, which shows the underlying health of their existing business, and very notably, from those substantial prepayments from customers under long-term agreements. For example, just in Q2 2023 alone, these prepayments were a primary driver of a $203.5 million inflow in cash from operations. That's a massive chunk coming directly from customers wanting to secure a future supply. The significance of customer prepayments really cannot be overstated. It serves as a powerful validation of XFAB's future demand visibility. Customers are effectively co-investing in the capacity they will need, literally putting their money up front. This de-risks the expansion for XFAB, guaranteeing future orders and providing a very attractive, low-cost funding source compared to debt or equity financing. They haven't had to significantly dilute shareholders to fund this, which is key. Consequently, because all available capital is being plowed back into growth to build this future capacity, XFAB does not currently pay a dividend, nor has it announced any share repurchase programs. It's a pure growth-focused investment at this stage. It requires investors to have a long-term perspective and believe in the eventual payoff of these significant capacity additions, which should lead to much higher revenue and free cash flow down the road if executed well, weighing the scales. Mm-hmm. Risks and valuation insights.
Okay. Every investment, even one with a strong strategic focus and clear tailwinds like XFAB seems to have, carries risks. It's never a one-way street. What should we be acutely aware of when looking at XFAB? What are the potential red flags or the most pressing vulnerabilities that could challenge their growth story or derail these plans?
Yeah, this raises an important question, as no business is without its vulnerabilities, especially in the capital-intensive cyclical semiconductor industry. The analysis highlights several key risks we need to consider. First, operational and cyclical risks. A major one we touched on is end market concentration. The automotive sector now constitutes over two-thirds of XFAB's revenue. While vehicle electrification is a powerful tailwind, any significant slowdown in global automotive production may be due to a recession or major delays in new EV model launches by their key customers, or perhaps a sudden unexpected shift in automotive technology favoring a competitor. Any of that could have a disproportionately negative impact on XFAB's top line. That's a concentration risk.
A dependence on one big sector.
Right. Then there's industry cyclicality itself. The 2024 downturn clearly demonstrated their vulnerability to inventory corrections, which can cause sharp and rapid declines in revenue and profitability, even in their specialized niche. They're not totally immune. Future cycles of oversupply or demand weakness remain a persistent risk for any semiconductor company, regardless of specialization. You have to expect them. Finally, under operational risks, there's capital expenditure execution risk. They're nearing the end of a very large and complex expansion program. Ramping up new semiconductor lines is notoriously difficult. Unforeseen delays, cost overruns, or difficulties in ramping up new equipment to high manufacturing yields could negatively impact their financial returns, delay their ability to meet future customer demand, and tie up capital for longer than anticipated. Execution is key here.
So even with a strong specialized focus, the broader global economic forces and the complexities of manufacturing can still create powerful headwinds for them. Exactly. Then we have market and technology risks. Competition is intense, even in this specialized niche. They face well-capitalized specialty foundries like Tower Semiconductor, who have their own deep expertise, and the specialized divisions of much larger players like GlobalFoundries. Increased competition could lead to pricing pressure, particularly if the market were to enter a phase of overcapacity for certain types of analog chips. That could potentially erode their margins, even with the stickiness. There's also the risk of technological obsolescence. While analog chip life cycles are generally longer than digital ones, rapid innovation is still constant in the semiconductor industry overall. The emergence of new materials, maybe gallium nitride, gains more traction than SiC in some areas, or disruptive device architectures. Perhaps a new type of sensor that combines functions in an entirely different way could challenge XFAB's existing technology portfolio. This requires continuous and significant investment in research and development just to maintain their competitive edge. They can't stand still.
Constant need to innovate, even on mature nodes.
Absolutely. And finally, financial and geopolitical risks. Their operational leverage, which we mentioned, helps profitability on the way up, means that while high fixed costs benefit them immensely during upcycles, allowing them to rapidly grow profits. A sharp drop in revenue, like we saw in 2024, can lead to severe profitability declines due to those fixed costs still needing to be paid regardless of volume. High leverage cuts both ways. In terms of geopolitical factors, while their European footprint is a strategic asset, providing local supply chain security, their operations in Malaysia and their exposure to global supply chains, including potentially China for raw materials or certain equipment, still create risks from regional instability, trade disputes, and tariffs. Think about the ongoing U.S.-China tech tensions. Those can create ripple effects globally. And lastly, currency fluctuations. XFIB reports its financials in U.S. dollars, but they have significant costs and some revenues denominated in euros due to their European operations.
While management describes the business as naturally hedged to some extent, sharp movements in the USD/EUR exchange rate can still create volatility in reported financial results. For example, they had a $17.2 million non-cash foreign exchange loss related to euro-denominated debt in Q2 2025. It's just another complexity to manage. It's a complex picture, certainly.
So despite its specialized niche and strategic geographic positioning, it's not entirely immune to the broader global economic and geopolitical currents. It definitely demands a close eye from investors. Now let's turn to valuation. This is always the tricky part, especially with cyclical companies. Given all these moving pieces, the growth, the downturn, the heavy investment, the risks, is XFAB a potentially discounted opportunity right now? Or are the risks fairly priced in by the market? What do the numbers suggest?
Yeah, valuation is always the million-dollar question, isn't it? And it's particularly tricky in cyclical industries like semiconductors because a company's earnings can swing wildly from year to year, making simple metrics sometimes misleading if you just look at one point in time. If we look at historical valuation ranges, the P/E ratio for XFA has been, well, highly volatile. As you'd expect. It was as low as 9.1x at the end of 2023. That was a period of peak earnings and very high profitability, so the E was large. However, it's now risen to over 35x on a trailing 12-month TTM basis as of mid-2025. That looks expensive, right? But this elevated PE is largely due to the recent downturn depressing the E earnings in the calculation, making the ratio appear artificially high. It's not necessarily indicative of fundamental overvaluation if you believe in the earnings recovery potential.
Right, the E is temporarily low.
Exactly. The EBITDA ratio, which, as we discussed, is often more stable and generally preferred for capital-intensive businesses like this because it's less affected by depreciation policies and capital structure, currently stands in the range of 6.6x to 7.5x on a trailing 12-month basis. That's more reasonable. An analyst forecasts for future earnings, which anticipate a recovery as that CapEx cycle winds down and volumes return, suggest forward EBITDA multiples in a much lower range of 4.3x to 6.3x. That clearly anticipates a significant rebound in profitability baked into expectations. Their price-to-book PB ratio is approximately 1.0x, right around book value. Now, that's relatively low for a technology company and suggests that the market isn't assigning a significant premium to the book value of its manufacturing assets. It's perhaps viewing them purely as fixed assets on the balance sheet rather than strategic, high-value, cash-generating infrastructure.
Okay, price-to-book of 1.0x is interesting. How does that compare to their competitors, Tower and GlobalFoundries? Does this suggest a potential discount relative to peers, or are their peers simply more efficient or have better prospects priced in?
Good question. In a peer group valuation comparison, XAGU appears to trade at a notable discount. Tower Semiconductor, for example, currently trades at a TTM EBITDA of approximately 8.6x to 9.9x. GlobalFoundries, despite its much larger scale and broader offerings, trades at a similar TTM EBITDA of about 9.0x to 9.5x. So XFU's TTM EBITDA of roughly 7.5x represents a notable 20-25% discount compared to these direct competitors. Now, this valuation gap could reflect several factors. Its smaller scale could warrant some discount. Its higher concentration in the automotive market might be viewed by some investors as higher risk, or perhaps there's some market skepticism about the precise timing and strength of its earnings recovery given the 2024 slowdown. The market might be taking a wait-and-see approach.
A significant discount, though. What about looking at it through a different lens, like cyclically adjusted or asset value?
Right. If we consider a cyclically adjusted and asset-based valuation, which tries to smooth out those cyclical swings and look at the underlying asset value, the picture becomes even more interesting, potentially. If XFV were to return to its 2023 peak EBITDA of around $246 million, assuming the market recovers and their new capacity ramps successfully, its current enterprise value of approximately $1.2 billion would imply an EBITDA multiple of less than 5x. Now, that would be very low for this sector, suggesting a potentially significantly undervalued asset if you believe that recovery takes hold and they successfully leverage their new capacity. That's the if. Furthermore, that low PB ratio of around 1.0x means the market values the company at roughly the accounting book value of its assets. Given the rapidly increasing costs and significant government incentives now required for building new fabs, a new state-of-the-art fab often costs tens of billions today. The replacement value of XFAB's existing operational manufacturing footprint, with all its specialized capabilities and crucial customer certifications, could actually be significantly higher than what is currently reflected on its balance sheet based on historical cost. This suggests that the market might not be fully appreciating the strategic value and future earning power of their specialized physical assets in today's supply chain constrained world.
So the numbers suggest a potential opportunity, maybe even a significant one, if you believe in the industry recovery, the long-term value of its specialized assets, and its deep market entrenchment, especially with that significant discount to peers currently. It sounds like a complex but potentially rewarding scenario for patient investors.
To conclude this deep dive, we really need to balance these points carefully, looking at both the bright spots and the undeniable challenges. On the side of investment merits, XFAB boasts a strong embedded position in powerful secular growth markets, automotive electrification, industrial automation, medical technology. These are markets with long life cycles and high barriers to entry. That's a great place to be. They also have a highly differentiated technological moat built on proprietary processes and decades of specialized expertise. This leads to high customer switching costs, fostering those incredibly sticky customer relationships and supporting resilient margins even in downturns. Their strategic capacity expansion, crucially backed by customer commitments and prepayments, positions them very well for future growth and a potential inflection point towards strong, positive free cash flow as those investments mature. Their favorable geopolitical positioning, with that significant European manufacturing footprint, is an increasingly important strategic asset in a world focused on supply chain resilience. That's a tailwind now. And finally, there's that valuation discount compared to peers, potentially offering an attractive entry point for investors who understand the cyclical nature of the business and have a longer-term horizon.
Okay, those are strong merits. What about the other side of the scale?
However, we must also weigh the investment risks. There's that high concentration in the automotive sector, over two-thirds of revenue. That makes them vulnerable to any specific slowdowns or shifts in that single industry. The inherent industry cyclicality means they're not immune to the broader ups and downs of the semiconductor market, as 2024 clearly demonstrated. You have to expect volatility. There are execution risks related to their large-scale capacity expansion. Ramping up new fabs is always complex and can face delays or cost overruns, impacting returns. They face ongoing competitive pressures from well-capitalized peers who are also vying for market share in these attractive niches. And of course, there's the current negative free cash flow, which, while strategic, absolutely requires a successful ramp-up of new capacity to generate those future returns for shareholders. The payoff isn't guaranteed. It's truly a balancing act between significant long-term opportunity and inherent industry challenges and execution risks.
It sounds like a company with a really strong foundation and a very clear strategic direction, deeply embedded in some of the most important long-term trends shaping our world. But it's also one that demands a close eye on those industry cycles, the successful execution of its ambitious growth plans, and the evolving competitive and geopolitical landscape. A truly fascinating player in a critical, often unseen part of the tech ecosystem. Outro. And we've covered a lot today on XFAB Silicon Foundries, and hopefully you've gained a much richer understanding of this specialized yet absolutely crucial player in the semiconductor world. We've seen how this specialty foundry isn't chasing the bleeding edge of silicon miniaturization, but instead is deeply embedded in the more than more world of analog and mixed signal chips, the chips that connect the digital world to our physical reality. They're strategically focused on robust, long cycle markets like automotive, industrial, and medical, showing impressive resilience and strategic foresight even through a tough recent industry downturn. We looked at their formidable competitive advantages, from proprietary technology and know-how to critical geographic positioning in Europe. And we saw how their massive capital investments, crucially backed by those customer prepayments, are building a powerful foundation for future growth.
Ultimately, understanding a company like XFA helps you appreciate the diverse and truly specialized nature of the semiconductor industry beyond just the big headlines about microprocessors and AI chips. It shows how critical, often unseen components enable the megatrends that impact all our lives, things like vehicle electrification, the rise of smart factories, and the rapid digitalization of healthcare. It's really a testament to how deep engineering expertise, highly specialized processes, and strategic market focus can create durable competitive advantages, even in a highly capital-intensive and notoriously cyclical sector. And it underscores the increasing importance of regional supply chain resilience in a changing geopolitical landscape, where having local manufacturing capability is becoming a prized strategic asset.
So if you think about XFAB and the broader semiconductor landscape, maybe consider this. In a world seemingly obsessed with speed and miniaturization, constantly shrinking transistors and chasing the next nanometer node, is the true durable long-term value increasingly found not just there, but also in the black art of specialized, often more mature technologies that reliably bridge the digital and physical worlds? Is it these robust, often unseen analog and mixed signal chips that are truly enabling the next generation of smart devices and critical infrastructure? And perhaps do they offer a potentially more stable, defensible investment in the process compared to just the relentless pursuit of raw computing power? What stands out to you from this deep dive into XFAB?